to glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. You'll find me online at mikeluoma.com, that's M-I-K-E-L-U-O-M-A.com, or glowinthedarkradio.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter after their .com/. Mike Luoma, M-I-K-E-L-U-O-M-A. We also have a Glow in the Dark Radio Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio, strangely enough. There's also a Glow in the Dark Radio mailing list. I send out an update once a month or so, not that often. When I've got stuff going on, stuff worth telling you about, I'll let you know. It's free, and when you sign up for it, you get the exclusive to the mailing list ebook, The Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. It's an anthology. It has the Alibi Jones short story you can't find anywhere else, Alibi Jones and the Ghost in the Machine, which is actually now part of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. It's incorporated into the novel, which is why it's not out there. But you can get a copy of it still in this anthology. There's previews of Alibi Jones' Vacation. There's part of the Vatican Assassin graphic novel in black and white. Some previews of Good Samaritan 2, also in black and white. Those will both be coming out in color in the next year or so. So this anthology is kind of a preview thing, kind of an exclusive thing, and you can only get it when you sign up for the mailing list. And you can do that at any of my sites, including the Facebook page. So I hope you'll think about joining my mailing list. On this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio, the adventures of Alibi Jones continue, and Alibi's search for the tiara known as the Sunrise of Her continues as well. The Sunrise of Her has been missing since it disappeared when the Darkur equivalent of a wedding reception was raided by thugs working for crime lord Rene Lavalore, who grabbed Alibi's ex-girlfriend, Katie Ramsey, whom Lavalore claims to own. The female Darkur getting married, or joined, as the Darkur actually call it, she was killed, along with other Darkur guests. Alibi's friend, the Darkur Kit, was the one getting joined to Trish, and he survived. But he blames Alibi for bringing the trouble into his life. Alibi would like to be going after Katie, but Lavalore sent his right-hand man, Peterson, to personally warn Alibi to back off, and said if he, Alibi, ever landed on Lavalore's world, Kismet, Alibi was a dead man. So instead, thanks to his Aunt Anita's machinations, Alibi is searching for the Darkur's missing artifact, the tiara, the Sunrise of Her. The station where the ceremony was raided, Paradisimo, was a dead end in Alibi's investigation. Krish wasn't able to help much either. But Krish was able to connect Alibi with someone who might help him. An old acquaintance of Alibi's father, and one of the most powerful and wealthiest human beings in the universe, Richard Wentworth. Alibi is off to visit Wentworth. Coming up in Chapter 5 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her, on Glow in the Dark Radio. Around now is where I usually do a little bit of news, but I don't really have too much to report this week. Not a lot going on, except for getting this podcast together. Now, in doing that, I did re-edit this chapter we're about to hear, Chapter 5 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. It originally was about 41 minutes, and now it is 35. So, yeah, we lost about 6 minutes of weird pauses and such. So it's tighter, it's faster, but I think it's a better-sounding chapter now. And it's a long one, too. Like I say, it's about 35 minutes long. And that's coming up next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We're more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
Now here's Chapter 5 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio.
So, you're Alibi Jones, right? The pilot asks, as Alibi squeezes up into the co-pilot's chair on the small capsule-shaped bridge of the ancient-looking spaceship Wentworth sent to Rigel IV to fetch him. The interior is small, more compact than the bridges of more recent models. The tight space smells faintly of burnt cinnamon and ozone. Yep, that's me, Alibi Jones, he tells the older man. He reaches out and shakes the pilot's hand. My name's Drex, he tells Alibi. I'll be your pilot. Shouldn't be a long trip. Strap yourself in. Alibi does as instructed. The co-pilot's chair has an old-fashioned flight harness instead of a simple shoulder belt. It takes Alibi a minute or so to fasten the harness into place. The pilot looks to be over 60, maybe over 70, Alibi figures. He's dressed in a pressed black and red uniform jumpsuit, stenciled with the Wentworth insignia on the arms, front pocket and back. Wentworth has his own landing bay and shipping facility on Rigel IV, a short transport ride away from the new project labs. The old converted scout ship had been landing as Alibi pulled up. The pilot met him at the ship's airlock and led him up onto the bridge.
An old man for an old ship. Short gray hair, clean cut. Looks ex-military.
As Drex readies the ship for launch, Alibi glances around the vintage cabin, admiring the classic details, the molding, the piping, and extra decorative touches they don't bother with on ships' interiors anymore. The decor looks older than Alibi, long out of style. The fixtures are worn but clean, the tans and browns faded from use and exposure. Nice antique, Alibi compliments the pilot.
Watch it, the man barks, sounding offended.
He talks to the ship.
Don't listen to him, girl.
He looks over at Alibi, his eyes narrow.
She's no antique. I've been flying this ship steady for 20 years. She needs her repairs now and then, but she's never been retired. Antique.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to piss you off, Alibi interjects when he gets the chance. I just meant, it's a nice older ship.
Guess I'm a little sensitive for her, the pilot says.
I have a ship of my own, Alibi tells him. I get it. He tries a different tack. Have you worked for Mr. Wentworth that whole time?
Longer, Drex says. He chuckles. I actually knew your father. You're Bernard Campion's kid, aren't you?
What the hell? Did my old man know everybody?
Yeah. Alibi turns away from the pilot and looks out the viewport at the landing bay outside.
You should be proud of him, kid, Drex says, growing a little more serious. I knew him back during the war. There's an old saying about some people being great and others having greatness thrust upon them. That was your dad, the thrusting kind. Well, you know, kind of.
Drex chuckles at a thought he doesn't share.
Anyways, you know what I mean. No offense, kid. He wasn't a great man, but he did rise to the occasion. He came through when we needed him, when everybody needed him. Can't ask for more than that.
He died when I was 3.
Didn't come through for me.
Yeah, sorry, I know the story, Drex says. Your mom and all that. Heard all about it, all over the news back then. So, maybe I've got parental issues, Alibi says with a shrug. I'm allowed. Fine, have your issues. Anyways, you got none with me. Drex changes the subject. You strapped in? Get ready, we're lifting off.
Drex fires up the engines. The ship vibrates and shakes more than Alibi is used to, but manages to stay intact as they rise up off the surface of Rigel IV.
The ride smooths out once they clear the atmosphere. But then the lurch accompanying the shift into transpace causes a small nausea explosion in Alibi's gut. "Whew," he lets out involuntarily. "Little rougher than normal for her," Drex apologizes. "Maybe she's getting you back for your antique comment." The pilot laughs at his own joke. He turns to the controls to initiate the shift back from transpace. "We'll see if she behaves on the other side." Coming out of transpace is a little smoother.
"Still not as smooth as newer models, old girl."
Earth appears, a large blue, white, green, and brown disk floating outside the ship's viewports as they arrive in orbit. A glint of sunlight to his right catches Alibi's attention. He looks over and sees Wentworth Station.
"Talk about antiques. The place has a rotating section. That part's gotta predate artificial G. That's like, what, 70 years old?"
The circular rotating part of the station is attached to a larger, stationary rectangular section below. Though newer, the facade of the lower part resembles an old Earth building, a relic from the cities of the home planet. It gives the station the look of an office building floating in space. Drex brings their ship in close to the lower section, in front of what looks like the main entrance. An airlock and walkway much larger than found on most commercial stations begins extending from the station's main entrance out towards their ship, the walkway's size alone an ostentatious display of wealth and waste. Once he brings the ship to a stop and docks at the end of the walkway, Drex leads Alibi off the bridge, through the ship's hallways, and back to the old ship's airlock. Alibi hears reverberations echo around him, the sound of the walkway attaching and sealing up against the side of their vessel. At the airlock, Drex punches in some codes. The airlock door opens, and the pilot motions for Alibi to precede him through onto the walkway outside. After Alibi leaves the small ship, he looks up through the clear, reinforced canopy of the walkway at the deep indigo carpet full of sparkling stars overhead. Drex emerges from the airlock next to Alibi. He follows Alibi's gaze and looks at the stars above as well. The two of them gaze up in silence for a moment. "Same stars," Drex says, finally. "What?" Alibi pulls his eyes off the stars and looks over at the man. "Same stars I see looking out the front of my ship every day," Drex says. "Seems a little different to see them like this," Alibi says, gesturing at the clear canopy over the walkway. "Something about the open space. Being able to breathe and look up, and not be stuck in an EVA suit, and still see them all this clearly, clearer than on any planet, like you're in a vacuum. Well, we are, I guess." Drex shoots another look up, and then looks over at the station, back at his ship, and then at Alibi. Alibi can't read any expression on the man's face. "Uh-huh, yeah, anyways," he says, "you go ahead. Mr. Wentworth will meet you inside." "You're not coming in?" "Nah, I gotta stay here with the ship. My job," he tells Alibi. "Mr. Wentworth is expecting you. You should probably get going." "Thanks." Alibi turns and walks down the walkway. At its end, he enters the station through an airlock equipped with what look like sliding glass doors. The extensive use of clear pressure plating for glass on the airlock doors is yet another indication, like the walkway, that no expense was spared building this place.
"That's enough clear pressure plating for the bridge viewports of 6 or 7 cruiser ships. Also, this Wentworth guy can have sliding glass doors on his main airlock? Wow. Of course, one of his companies builds those ships."
A guard stands on either side of the airlock as Alibi enters the plush reception area of the station. They stand stock still, staring straight ahead past and through him as he walks by. Alibi looks around at the opulence on ready display. There's nothing subtle about the burnished gold trim that lines the cream and crimson of the walls, or the placement of instantly recognizable statuary pieces around the room's perimeter.
"I remember some of these from school. Thought these statues were in museums. This entry hall is designed to awe and humble new arrivals. Kind of easy to see through."
"Alibi Jones?"
An older man, in his 70s, wearing a gold-trimmed red smoking jacket, dark pants, and slippers, enters the reception area. His dark hair is gray at the temples, his skin tanned but worn-looking. His face, however, looks too perfect.
"Enough cosmetic work, old man? Jeesh."
"Hello, yes, I'm Alibi.
Alibi tries to stand a little straighter.
Welcome to my home. Won't you come with me?
The man asks. Sure, Alibi responds. But he's distracted, bothered by something he's noticed on some level, but can't quite put his finger on. Something just slightly wrong about the man.
That's not him. He isn't real. That's a robo-servant or something. Guess I wouldn't expect a guy like Wentworth to answer his own door.
The man turns his back on Alibi and walks off to the left, expecting Alibi to follow. When Alibi hesitates, the man calls back.
This way!
He follows him. Alibi soon finds himself riding in a strange, seated elevator car. The robo-servant says will take them up into the rotating section of the station. The elevator is somehow able to match the spin of the rotating section without turning Alibi's stomach over. He feels the subtle shift as the car moves between the sections, but the sensations are minimal. When the doors open, the robo-servant leads him out of the elevator and into another red, cream, and gold corridor. Alibi feels himself floating a little.
That's weird. The gravity is set at like half a G in this section.
Step in here, please.
The automated man has opened what appears to be a small closet. I'm not stepping in there, Alibi protests. I don't like small spaces, and I won't be locked up.
This is a scanner, the robo-servant tells him. You are not being locked in anywhere. As for the space being small, this will not take long. You will only be inside for a moment. Once cleared by the scanner, you will find your visit most pleasant. A security precaution only, I assure you.
Alibi stares at the robo-servant's blank eyes. He looks back at the closet. Then Alibi reluctantly steps inside the small space. The man closes the door behind him. Nothing seems to happen, but a moment later, before any real claustrophobia can kick in, the door opens.
There, the robo-servant says with measured reassurance. Clean, you see? Not so bad after all.
Alibi steps out of the space. He doesn't answer, just glares as he stares at the creature.
Very well, then. Mr. Wentworth will see you now. Follow me.
Again? Getting tired of following. More mini power plays.
The robo-servant leads him along down the corridor, stopping in front of a set of double doors. He turns back to Alibi.
Mr. Wentworth awaits you inside, he says.
The robo-servant steps back out of the way. The double doors slide apart, revealing a dimly lit room. Alibi steps from the bright corridor into the shadows of the room, beyond the doors.
Don't look so timid, boy, a voice calls out.
Alibi tries to force his eyes to adapt as he squints into the darkness, looking for the voice's source. Mr. Wentworth?
Alibi Jones, the voice answers.
It's not a question. Alibi advances into the room. As his eyes grow accustomed to the dim lighting, he sees the dark shape of a man behind the large desk. The man standing in the shadows is the same size as the robo-servant, except that his head looks almost too small. For a moment, it appears as if there is no actual head, just a skull. Alibi blinks.
A trick of the lighting. It's okay. He has a head.
Behind the man, Alibi begins to make out shelves. Bookcases filled with what look like actual old books line the wall behind the desk. The smell of stale vanilla pipe tobacco hangs in the air, barely disguising the faint, lingering odor of disinfectant.
I don't like too much light. Hurts my eyes, Wentworth explains. But I'll bring it up a bit for you. Don't know why you keep squinting like that. You've got young eyes.
Alibi doesn't know what to say. This old man in front of him is quite possibly the most powerful human in the known universe.
Probably not a good idea to offend him.
Lights up two clicks, the old man barks.
The gloom lifts a bit. Alibi starts to make out details where before there were only shapes and blobs of dull color. Alibi chuckles. The man behind the desk is a much older version of the robo-servant.
Guess he likes seeing himself like he used to look a long time ago. Well, who wouldn't?
Something amuses you?
The man demands, more than asks. Not amused, Alibi says. It just struck me how weird it is, me, standing here.
Weird?
Now Wentworth is asking a question. You're somebody most people have heard of, or at least somehow vaguely know about, Alibi tells him. Richest man alive. Most powerful man in the world. You're like a legendary figure out in the colonies. Never thought I'd be standing here talking to you, that's all.
So that's weird, Wentworth chuckles. Well, fine.
He stares at Alibi, and laughs a little again. What? Alibi asks, growing a little annoyed but trying not to show it.
You do look like him. A little like your mother, too, that Asian woman who shot him. Sorry about that, Wentworth says, trailing off from his tangent.
Damn it, I don't want to hear about my mother and father. Then again, I knew Wentworth would probably bring him up at some point. Better he does it now, get it out of the way.
That bothered you, didn't it?
Wentworth says. He smiles at his own perceptiveness.
That reminds me of myself when I was your age. Kept hearing about how much I looked like old Milt. Hated it.
You did? What did you do?
I killed him.
What? The question escapes Alibi involuntarily.
It was a joke, kid, Wentworth tells him, sounding disappointed. Milton Wentworth lived to the ripe old age of 85.
Wentworth allows himself another chuckle.
I passed him a long time ago. Old bastard.
He punctuates his excitement with a racking cough. Alibi waits until the man's coughing calms before speaking again. I want to thank you again for seeing me, Mr. Wentworth. I'm not sure what you can do to help me, but it is good of you to make the time to...
Can it, kid, the old man says, cutting him off. No need to blow smoke up my ass. I don't like to waste the limited time I've got left, you know what I mean? Dr. Krish is a smart man. He wouldn't have sent you here if he wasn't sure there was something I can do for you. And I wouldn't have agreed to see you if I didn't think there was something I could do with you.
He said you know the right, wrong people, Alibi says.
The right, wrong ones for what?
To help me track down the stolen sunrise of her, Alibi explains bluntly, now realizing Wentworth values the no-bullshit approach. Do you know the right, wrong people for that? Wentworth doesn't answer immediately.
Maybe he doesn't. That would be disappointing.
I'm not sure that I do, Wentworth says, finally. Rumor was Lavalore had it, but it has been confirmed he does not.
So, you know for a fact that Lavalore doesn't have it? Alibi wants to be sure of what he just heard. Wentworth seems a little distracted by his thoughts. He regains focus to answer.
Lavalore? No, he doesn't have it, Wentworth says. Renee was actually quite perturbed by its disappearance. He gets a lot of business from the Dakor.
Alibi stares at the old man, curiosity building.
That whole business was botched, Wentworth says. The Dakor deaths and the theft were well beyond the expected parameters of the operation that grabbed Katarina Ramsey, from what I understand.
How do you know all that? Alibi finally lets out. Are you tapped into some kind of information stream or something?
I'll let you in on a little secret, Wentworth says. Information isn't power. Knowledge is power. Too often, much information is trivial knowledge, repeated by a sort of endless echo chamber among members of the general public. True knowledge isn't just information. True knowledge, that is something else entirely. That is my primary engine, or rather, the fuel that drives my engine. You need not be paying constant attention to everything. You need only pay close attention to the proper things at the proper time. You need good sources. Old as I am, boy, you can be sure I have some excellent sources.
Listen to this guy. Blah, blah, blah.
Am I boring you?
Wentworth asks, sharply, suddenly snapping back Alibi's attention. Nope, it's good to know Lavalore doesn't have it on Kismet, Alibi admits.
Especially seeing as how you've been told you're not welcome there, eh?
Wentworth says. The old man watches Alibi for his reaction. How did you know? Never mind. Alibi stops himself. More true knowledge? Alibi asks. Wentworth smiles.
Back to the matter at hand. Wentworth says. The sunrise of Hur is a treasure, but a small treasure, Alibi. Of infinite value to the Dakur, for sure, and quite pricey on the market. But that market also includes many more valuable items that are out there, and potentially out there. You see, I collect artifacts myself, occasionally, Wentworth tells Alibi. There are many treasures out among the stars. There's one thing that mankind can be thankful for in discovering the greater universe, the worlds of the Flayes, the Domo, the Snacked, the Dakur, the Ta, all the worlds once controlled by the Eldred. It's that it has helped us to rediscover our sense of adventure as a race. Look at how many young people like you have headed out among the stars, Wentworth opines.
Younger than me, Alibi mumbles. Entitled little shit.
From up here, you'll have to excuse me if you all seem about the same age.
Wentworth dismisses Alibi's crack with one of his own.
You are also too young to appreciate how long we've been waiting to explore some of those planets out there. The Eldred tried to stop anyone else from discovering the wonders hidden on their worlds when they died out at the end of the war. So many planets rendered toxic, uninhabitable, and plain unapproachable by their plagues, defenses, and weapons.
Wentworth again grows distracted, momentarily lost in the past, remembering the war. He quickly comes back to himself.
It has taken a long time, but some of those old Eldred worlds have finally begun to detoxify, and some of my scientists think our human minds may be growing capable of unlocking some of their mental traps. It's not common knowledge, but your own father claimed he was able to counter some of Dolomei's mental attacks during the war.
Wentworth leans forward, looking up so he can look Alibi in the eye, as if seeking something.
This detoxification of ancient worlds is not yet common knowledge, Wentworth says, breaking the spell of the moment. I'm going to trust you won't repeat it to the wrong people.
No, I won't, Alibi says. I didn't know there were any safe... No, wait, that's not true. Duraminar.
Duraminar? Wentworth repeats,
sounding curious himself.
Yes, I heard about that. The Dakur found that it had somehow cleansed itself. One of our first rays of hope we might one day explore the Eldred worlds. But of course, I don't need to tell you about the Eldred, Wentworth says.
There's a new glint in his eye.
You know, Alibi, I would like to hear from you about the Eldred you encountered last year.
More knowledge? Alibi asks, though he knows the answer.
Of course.
Can't hurt, right? Tell him something. Then maybe he'll be more inclined to tell me what I need to know. If he knows. Won't mention anything about the time travel stuff, though. Don't know what he knows about that.
Alibi tells Wentworth about how he and the Dakur Kit discovered Azamet and his new breed of Eldred in an abandoned old Eldred facility on an airless planetoid at the edge of human and Tekta space, the place where Alibi also found and rescued Katie. Leaving out the time travel element, he relates how Azamet escaped to the installation on Duraminar. And Duraminar is where the Eldred and Azamet tried to take off the top of my skull, and almost succeeded. Until Kit and a contingent of safe ships showed up, Alibi says. But again, like I was saying before, these new aliens aren't the same as the old Eldred. They're more primal, more vicious, Alibi finishes.
Yes, very interesting,
Wentworth replies, taking it in. He remains silent for a moment. So, there are other worlds like Duraminar? Alibi prods him. How can we tell if they're still toxic or not? Alibi asks two questions at once.
There are, Wentworth answers, and we have some methods, probes and such, but others seeking out detoxified worlds are not bound by the laws of the Solar Alliance, and so use other means.
What are you saying? Alibi questions. Are they sending people down to the surface to see if a planet is safe? That's murder!
Independents have been known to send those they deem expendable down to Eldred worlds to determine their viability and level of lethality, Wentworth informs him.
Into what? You mean warlords? Guys like Lavalore? They do this?
Oh, yes,
Wentworth says.
Would Lavalure use Katie like that? Shit, I've got to get her out of there. But if Lavalure did send her out like that, I wouldn't have to set foot on Kismet to help her escape. Fuck it, I don't care. I'm going to Kismet, and I'm going to get her out of there. Somehow, someday. Just not today.
You look distracted. You're thinking about the girl, Wentworth tells Alibi. Don't look so surprised. I know there was something between you two, and I've just informed you that Lavalure sends people out to explore Eldred worlds. Don't have to be a mind reader to know where yours is going.
If she was valuable enough for him to make the effort that he did to grab her, Alibi says, I can only hope he wouldn't waste her by sending her out like that to die.
Perhaps he would not, Wentworth says.
He frowns.
It would be best, and probably healthiest for you, if you put her out of your mind and forgot about her, the old man advises. There are many such young women in the universe, young man.
Yeah, thanks, Alibi says. People keep telling me that, but it's not that easy, you know?
What? You think you love her or something foolish like that? Wentworth laughs at Alibi.
Sure, Alibi says in defense. Well, kind of. We weren't together at the end there. By the time we went to Kit's ceremony, I mean. We'd broken up, Alibi tries to explain. But nobody deserves to be kept like a slave. How can the Solar Alliance just stand by and allow that?
Because space is a big place, boy, Wentworth lectures. Can't be everywhere.
We know where Kismet is.
Lavalure is only one of them. Do you know how many of those warlords, as you call them, are out there? There are more every day. Every opportunistic little fuck with a trust fund is striking out to become a robber baron of the spaceways. It's idiotic. Thank God most of them end up getting ripped off and find themselves working for some other, smarter thug who managed to somehow trick them into forfeiting their fortune to them, the old man says. He smirks.
See? Alibi points out with enthusiasm. You do agree with me. They are entitled brats.
You know, boy, Wentworth says, wagging a finger at him, you haven't yet shown me that you're not one yourself.
Alibi stares back at the old man. He plays stare down with him until the old man cracks a smile.
Okay, so that's not true, Wentworth admits.
He smiles again.
You're not too entitled, anyway. I'm not going to tell you again of how you remind me of your father, because I know that would just piss you off. And I think you might be smarter than he was, but don't let that go to your head.
Alibi smiles. Thank you.
Don't thank me yet. If you're as smart as we both think you are, think about this. Many, if not most, of the Eldred worlds were originally settled by the ancient enemy and ruled by them until they were overthrown a million years ago. There are treasures on those worlds, Alibi. Weapons, devices, technology beyond anything we have now, beyond anything we can even imagine now. With Dolomei, we saw that the ancient enemy had mental powers. Imagine if a device was found on one of those worlds that unleashed that power in us humans.
Never mind us. What if Azamet got his hands on them?
What are you saying? Alibi asks. Has anything been found? Do you know something?
I know many things, boy. Calm down, Wentworth says. There are stories, just stories mostly, passed down over the centuries among other races. Stories of great weapons once wielded by the ancient enemy, as they held the worlds of the universe together under their rule. As more of humanity encounters more of the races once ruled by the ancient enemy, more stories are told. But if any actual item had surfaced yet, I would know about it.
How? Because the weapons are so powerful it would be obvious? Wentworth grins before he answers.
Well, perhaps that is true, but no, he says. I will know because I have the wrong people out there looking for me. If I have spent my money well and wisely, when one of the legendary weapons of the ancient enemy does reappear, it will be mine.
Oh, Alibi realizes something else Wentworth has been trying to tell him. You've been spending a lot of money? He asks Wentworth.
I have been. Still do.
Shit. Alibi frowns.
Whoever finds one of these artifacts will make a fortune selling it to someone like Wentworth. maybe even by selling it to Wentworth himself. If these artifacts are costly to him, they're pretty much priceless. What value is any human life weighed against that to men like Lavalore, or to men like this old man in front of me?
Ah, you are as smart as I hoped, Wentworth says, as he sees the understanding light up Alibi's face. Might not matter how valuable she is to him, huh? Correct.
Kismet, here I come.
If you are smart, Wentworth says, you are not now thinking about going to Kismet.
Right, Alibi answers. The old man looks at him and frowns.
Your Aunt Anita is also smart. I understand now why she has you looking for the sunrise of her, Wentworth says with a knowing nod. Better for you to look for the tiara than the girl.
Maybe I can do both, Alibi says.
Maybe you can die a quick, pointless death on Kismet, is that what you're telling me?
Wentworth challenges him.
You need to forget about that girl, at least for now. She is beyond your reach.
Alibi stares back at the old man.
I am going to see about sending you to meet one of the less disagreeable wrong people, someone I know who finds things for me, Wentworth says. Come around the desk, we'll call him together.
Alibi walks up to and around the desk. As he gets closer, he fights back the reflex to gag a little at the growing odor, a mixed assault of sickly sweet floral and medicinal smells. Up close, Alibi sees that the business suit Wentworth wears is actually a tailored exosuit, a recent development in humankind's own technology that grants full mobility to frail patients.
The exosuit and the lower gravity together must help keep him going.
Wentworth hasn't been able to fight all the ravages of aging. His skin is tight across his face, as if some kind of suction inside of his skull has pulled it all in, creating cavities around his eyes.
That's why he looked like a skull before. Man, how old is he?
Get me Finder, Wentworth barks at the desk comm.
Finder? Come on, he couldn't do better than that.
He's called Finder because he's good at finding things, Wentworth says, enjoying explaining the obvious to Alibi as the comm makes the connection.
A grizzled face appears, holographically floating over the desk. Unkempt, straggly gray and black hair frames a dark-skinned face whose mustache and beard seem to have minds of their own as well.
Mr. Wentworth!
The man sounds surprised and agitated.
It's like a week before we agreed on Mr. Wentworth. I'm not calling about that, Finder. I have someone here with me.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. What? Something new?
Nothing we should talk about like this, Wentworth says. I want to send my young friend here down to talk to you. He doesn't need you to do the work. He just needs to be pointed in the right direction. Isn't that right, Alibi?
That's right, Mr. Wentworth, Alibi answers. I just need a little help. He feels dumb.
I don't know, Mr. Wentworth. Can't have people trampling in and out of my place, you know?
This is just one person, Finder, Wentworth works on the man. I can have Drex fly him right down to you. You can meet him on the beach. In and out.
Huh. Well, maybe.
Come on now, Finder. I'll cover your fee myself.
Really?
The man's eyes light up.
Immediately, Wentworth assures him.
Okay, then.
The man's tone changes entirely.
How soon you want to meet?
I'll have Drex fly him down soon. Let's say 4 hours from now. 5 o'clock, your time.
Same place I usually meet Drex?
Same place, Wentworth confirms.
That's him?
Finder asks, nodding at Alibi.
That's him,
Wentworth says. Hello, Alibi says, waving feebly.
Okay,
Finder says, stretching the word out.
See you soon, kid. Finder out.
The man's head disappears.
Finder's down near Buenos Aires, near the beach, at a place called Mar del Plata. As I said to Finder, I'll have Drex fly you down, Wentworth tells Alibi. He knows where to land, where to meet Finder. He'll make sure you have the chance to ask about the Decor's treasure.
Thanks, Alibi says. Thanks for helping to cover the fee, too.
I am only covering part of the fee. The other part falls to you, the old man says.
You never said
How much is that going to be? I mean, I could probably get the SA to cover something, but...
It's not a monetary amount, Wentworth says. Part of Finder's fee is that you must find something for him as well. It is how he does business.
Really? Alibi asks. What a ripoff! It doesn't sound like he even finds anything himself. He gets everybody else to do the work for him. He's just a middleman.
Ah, but a middleman with a knack for knowing who to ask to find what, Alibi, Wentworth says. You may be looking for item A and not able to find it, but perhaps you can find item B. Finder then finds someone who can find item A for you, who is perhaps looking for item C and can't find it. And then a third person who can find item C appears, but he needs item B. It's ABC, you see. Finder finds the people who can find the things other people need, or they find him. It's a gift.
It's something, all right, Alibi says. You're hurting my head, old man. But if this Finder dude can actually help me find the sunrise of her, I'll be more than happy to sing his praises. Hell, I'll write a frickin' song about the guy.
I just wonder what he'll expect me to find for him.
That was Chapter 5 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio. Wentworth returns. Didn't seem to help too much, though. Unless this thing with Finder pans out. Sounds a little iffy to Alibi Jones. We'll find out how Alibi finds Finder in our next chapter of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. My next episode of this podcast is going to be episode number 450, 450. A nice big round number. And I'm debating whether or not to do something special for the show. Haven't decided yet. So I might not have a chapter from this book, or I might. Might do something special and this chapter, the next chapter. But I hope you'll be back to see what happens. I do hope you enjoyed this chapter of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. I enjoyed bringing back the character of Richard Wentworth. He's so wealthy and powerful. He's amoral. And now he's so old, there's little patience and empathy left. So, he's got a unique voice, his own personal skewed outlook on life, you know. I like bringing some of the characters from the Vatican Assassin trilogy into Alibi Jones's stories. I try to do it in such a way that you don't really need to know what they did in Vatican Assassin to understand them as characters in The Adventures of Alibi Jones. Sometimes that means a little heavier exposition than I'd like, but I try to be artful. I also try to incorporate background into what the character says and what others say about them. But I also try to give some meaning to the character's return that longtime readers, fans of the Vatican Assassin trilogy, will appreciate. For example, in this chapter, Alibi's visit to Wentworth Station mirrors his dad's, BC's, visit, his first visit, all those years ago in Vatican Assassin, including encountering Wentworth's robo-servant. You can compare and contrast Alibi and BC's reactions if you want. But if you were wondering, is that on purpose? Yes, that was on purpose. That's about all for this time. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.